Welcome to Chatting with the Jacarmy. I'm Alex Jacarza, and this is your journey into the world of the fans of Jacara Pro Wrestling, or as we like to call ourselves, the Jacarmy. Kevin Ford was the very first guest on Season 1 of Chatting with the Jacarmy, and I was very glad to get a chance to chat with him and dive a little bit more into what he loved about wrestling in Jacara, including the origins of the Jacara Special websites and the Viva Jacara podcast. This was a very fun chat, and I was glad that Kevin was able to bear with me as I tried something a little bit different in the format, including some questions from people on Twitter. I hope you guys enjoy as Kevin Ford returns to Chatting with the Jacarmy. Hello, everyone. Alex Jacarza here with my buddy Kevin Ford. Kevin, welcome back to Chatting with the Jacarmy.
Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
So, for those that didn't get a chance to listen to your original interview with Baz, I wanted to kind of go through the basic questions to start us off. So, let's start with what got you into pro wrestling, whether that's your first memory of it, or just kind of in general, like maybe your initial thoughts.
Well, my dad tells it when I was younger, you know, I have an older brother who's very into video games. So, like on weekends when we go out, to places, my mom would usually split off and do her thing while my dad would take my brother and I to the toy store and wherever else in the, like if it was at a mall or something. And then we'd usually end up at the arcade. So my brother would go off and he'd play games and my dad would be pushing me around in my stroller. At that time, the WrestleFest arcade game for the WWF was around. And as he tells it, I was so transfixed on all the characters that I would see on the screen. You know, there's Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior and Demolition and the Legion of Doom. And I remember seeing it even when I was a little older and just being like, who are these characters? You know, to me, they're all so colorful and larger than life and stuff. But I was certainly like a little afraid of what they were too. As I got a little older, I started getting into wrestling itself. I remember the first Raw I ever watched was in February of 1994. But before that, I would go to Blockbuster and get some of the Coliseum videos. I would get some of the wrestling figures. And for whatever reason, I was strictly a WWF kid, even through elementary and middle school when WCW was around. WCW was much more popular during like the Monday Night War in my area anyways, but I always felt like you had to choose sides. So I stuck with WWF, but that being a little kid and seeing the WrestleFest arcade game was my first memory of wrestling in general.
That's awesome. Okay. So, kind of with that, how did you find out about Jacara and how did you get into it?
Well, to talk about how I got into Jacara, I really have to talk about how I got into Ring of Honor. And as I said, I was a big wrestling figure person and I was on message boards. And I remember I would jump over to other message boards within that different forum. And the first thing I'd really heard about Ring of Honor was when people were talking about Austin Aries defeating Samoa Joe for the Ring of Honor world title. And so I decided I wanted to see what this was. And at that time, they had some retail DVDs in store. So I bought the first show, loved it. Low key, Bryan Danielson, Christopher Daniels was the main event. And it blew me away. And so at the time, though, I was just in high school and I didn't have much money, but people online were giving away some DVDs. And then a couple years later, when I was in college, I had money and I started getting fervently into Ring of Honor with 2007 really being the year that I dug my teeth into it, was just buying every show and couldn't get enough. And at the same time, 2007 was the same period in which Mike Quackenbush, Jigsaw, Hella Wicked, and Gran Akuma all debuted for Ring of Honor. And I slowly started getting into Jacara through them because I had heard also on the Wrestling Observer website, Brian Alvarez and his co-host Vincent Verhey had reviewed, infamously at this point, the King of Trios 2007 Night 3 show, where they praised Ken the Box versus Mecha Mummy and Ricochet and Claudio, but they just buried the tag team gauntlet on that show. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is this company? Because you hear Jacara and you hear about some of the characters like Ken the Box, and you're like, is this some weird company in Japan? But kind of looking it up, I was like, wait, I recognize Matt Sydal and these guys I know from Ring of Honor and Delirious and whomever else. And so from there, I started tuning into the podcast A Go-Go. And because at that time I was still buying every Ring of Honor show. And I was just like, I just don't have the money to get into another wrestling company. But I watched the podcast A Go-Go, really liked following the storylines through there, seeing all the clips. And then I started following the company and their results as of today. And I remember the one thing that really intrigued me was the Chris Hero and Equinox storyline when Equinox lost his mask. And I thought the whole story of him lying about who he was to get into Jakara to circumvent the Wrestle Factory was just so interesting, just so different from what a lot of wrestling companies did. And I followed that character up to King of Trios 2008. And I was paying attention to all those announcements, seeing just all these crazy teams I had never heard of, like Team El Dorado and Kaiju Big Battle and all these other random teams, along with guys who I knew like Larry Sweeney. And I had also heard a lot about Chuck Taylor and watched a lot of his YouTube videos. Like Chuck Taylor, kind of in a way, is like the original YouTube wrestler with all of his videos of him scaring fans. And I recognized enough Ring of Honor people from the show, and also, you know, like Team WWF with Demolition, the One Man Gang, that I knew that King of Trios 2008 were going to be the first Jakara shows that I paid for on DVD and watched. And sure enough, I did. And I remember it was Easter weekend. I went home, and with a couple of friends, I watched all three nights in the span of 2 days. I've been hooked ever since. I knew after watching those shows that I wanted to go to the next King of Trios, and it just kicked off from there. And my fandom of Jakara just grew and grew after those shows. So hopefully that's not too long-winded of an answer, but that kind of encapsulates where I'm coming from with my Jakara fandom.
Yeah, no, that'll do it. I do want to kind of go back, because you mentioned about being a fan of collecting the wrestling figures. I haven't had too many of those. I usually end up just using the action figures I have and wrestling around with those. What are some of your favorite wrestling figures that you've collected?
I was very happy not too long ago to rub in Joey Eastman's face on Twitter that I am the owner of all seven of the last Hasbro WWF figures, which were – Hasbro was the company that produced the WWF figures between, I want to say, 1990 and 1994. And that's when, or maybe early 95, but either way, those are the figures that I grew up with and a lot of people are very nostalgic for. And I've kept them over time. And in my adult years, I've tried to go and fix some holes in my collection. And, my dad over time through birthdays and Christmas and such amassed through eBay all of those because they're called the green packs because the cards they're on are green. Mm-hmm. And it's the very last set Hasbro ever made. Limited quantities were made of them. They never came to stores around me. And they go for a lot of money on eBay. And a lot of it, the reason is because five of the seven people are first time ever figures. And one of them is one of them is the 1-2-3 kid. And I know Joey Eastman has been trying to collect all of the Hasbros. And he has a picture of his a shelf in his home above his fireplace with all of them. But one of them is the 1-2-3 kid in the green pack. And the reason that he has that in its original package is because he was given it to him by Sean Waltman himself. And he said, I'll give you this, but you have to promise not to open it. And I'm like, damn, that's a cool story. So, but yeah, those are definitely the ones that I have the most fondness for. You know, the rest I just kind of collected, but thinking back, those are the ones I definitely have the most nostalgia for. The rest are just kind of collected, like having the rosters and being able to have the most people, but nothing beats the original Hasbros, if you ask me.
Yeah. It's kind of cool hearing about that. Like I said, I haven't had too many figures myself. I used to have, I don't know if you ever had them, but they had like these kind of bendy ones. They weren't like the regular posable ones, but they were kind of like, I don't even know how to describe it. And it was funny because the thing I still remember to this day was that it was a WCW wrestler. I don't even remember who it was. I just remember that, but like there was that, and I actually have I have one that's labeled as I think Batista, but it's actually like CM Punk in a Batista box.
I think I know what you're talking about from there. Now I know Galoob back in the day was making WCW figures at the same time that Hasbro was making them, and I had like an Arn Anderson Bendham figure, and WWF had their own Bendham figures in between Hasbro and Jax when those came out. And I had all those too. I have a big box of those. You know, that's the thing is I never really watched WCW, but I would collect wrestling figures from anywhere and everywhere. Like I was watching ECW on TNN when all the ECW figures came out. So of course I had to buy all those and, You know, thankfully that is an addiction my parents were happy to feed, you know. I can only get in so much trouble playing with wrestling toys in my basement.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and that's the other thing is that kind of led me to be like, I don't know who Ron Simmons is, but I'll buy his action figure and then I'll discover who that is. And, you know, it's an interesting way to discover new wrestlers and new companies and stuff, but hey, it worked for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually I think Galoob sounds about right. Cause I remember that was one of the bigger toy company names out there back in the day.
One of the funny things to me is that I think it's not Mattel. Maybe it is Mattel who has the WWF license now. But they have they have two series of figures. Ones are called Basics, which are cheaper figures, both in price and just, you know, you buy the figure, you get the figure, and that's that. But they also have this set of figures called Elites, which are about double the price, but they also come with a ton of different accessories, and they make them both for contemporary wrestlers and legends. Tons of points of articulation, way better than any wrestling figure that's ever been produced. And I'm just happy, and I have a few of them, but I'm glad I wasn't in my most diehard wrestling figure day, or I'd be a very broke man. There, the kids today are just spoiled with the great wrestling figures they can get.
Yeah, yeah. I'll have to remember to post a picture of the one that I have back home when I get a chance. Because, like I said, I remember the fact that I spotted it at a Target, and it was, I'm pretty sure it was listed as in a Batista box. The figure itself was basically CM Punk, and I recognized it because of the Pepsi tattoo of all things. I was like,
I think they're called like Flexums or something along those lines, maybe.
Oh, okay. The bendy ones, or
yeah, I never had any of those because I thought those were kind of dumb. but I actually have an interesting figure story just in this last week. Mm-hmm. It was a really nice day, so I was driving around, and from time to time I'll pop into a Toys R Us that's close enough but not super close to be convenient by me, just to see kind of what's new, what's in stores, and, you know, maybe I'll pick up a Sami Zayn figure or a Finn Balor or a Hideo Itami, something like that, once in a while. And I don't know if you're familiar with this concept, but a big thing they've been doing lately is these mystery box figures and keychains, and even Lego's gotten into them, where they have like a set of like 16 characters, and you buy a figure in a box or a bag, and you don't know who you're getting. So it's a completely blind buy. You could buy six boxes and get the six exact same figure. And, you know, kind of the hope is you want to collect them all, and it's kind of the thrill of, I don't know who I'm getting in this.
Yeah.
And WWE did something very similarly. And at my Toys R Us, they had two of them left, and they were on clearance for about $5 each. And I was like, you know, I've driven all this way. What the hell? I'll buy these two. And, you know, as I'm buying this, I'm like, you know, just knowing my luck, I'm going to get like two Brie Bellas or something like that. Not there's anything wrong with Brie Bella, but I don't really need two of them.
Yeah.
And so I buy them and I take them home and I open them. And to my pleasant surprise, I got the Ultimate Warrior and Daniel Bryan, which I could not have been happier with. So that's one of those instances where an impulse purchase worked out in my favor. And now those two are happily sitting on my desk at work.
Nice. Nice. Okay. So kind of going back to Chikara, what are some of your favorite moments and maybe your favorite wrestler from Chikara?
Gosh, that's such a broad question. You know, it's like, where do you even begin? You know, like I said, like King of Trios 2008 was really the period where I started watching. And, you know, the Hero Equinox revelation is a great moment because that, even though I didn't see it right away when it happened, when I did see it, I was happy that was the jumping on point for me. Mm-hmm. But even going from there, that year's Young Lions Cup, Night 3 has two really great moments. The first being Mike Quackenbush's speech explaining why he turned on Shane Storm in the beginning of the Eye of Tyr angle. That's a great moment. And then just the end with Vin Gerard and Fire Ant having what I consider to be one of the best matches ever in Chikara, and just how into it the crowd was and just how emotional it was. And for Fire Ant to ultimately win and that being the last match in that Hellertown building is something really special. But the one thing that even a little bit I kind of kick myself to this day over missing is the formation of the BDK. I was at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C. because the Survivor Series was that night. I remember I'm there, and, you know, Chikara's matinee shows on Sundays. So I'm sitting there and waiting for the event to unfold, and my friend Jerome, who helped co-found Pro Wrestling Ponics for me, shoots me a text message that basically just says he lays out what happened with the BDK, and I'm just losing my mind. I'm like, I wish I could leave and just go home and somehow watch this. Like, what is going on? I couldn't wait to get that DVD in my hands. And then from a live perspective, you know, 2009 King of Trios was my first live experience with Chikara, and I'll never forget the atmosphere for that Kota Ibushi, El Generico, Nick Jackson, Jigsaw four-way, and just how insane it was, how everything kept escalating, how the crowd was just losing their minds. It was just like a collective recognition from an audience that you're watching something really special and really good. And along with that, jump forward a couple years to King of Trios 2011, and the whole moment of just the whole weekend encapsulating Larry Sweeney, who unfortunately had passed away just 4 days prior to that weekend, and how it was an emotional powder keg in there, but everybody kept it together and put on just three spectacular nights of wrestling, almost capitalizing with Sean Waltman, who had been on this crazy comeback weekend as the 1-2-3 Kid, having his match with El Generico and the Rey de Voladores, and just how phenomenal that match was and how that was a banner weekend for him. And it was just, gosh, it was crazy. And then with that, at the end of that year, High Noon, the first Chikara pay-per-view, I was there to see Eddie Kingston versus Mike Quackenbush, and that atmosphere was also crazy. Just seeing the entire locker room come out, wrestlers from the past who people hadn't seen in a while, like Hydra and even Reckless Youth being there. That was one of those moments I saw Reckless Youth and my jaw literally dropped. That was somebody I just did not expect to see on that evening. And just the emotion of Eddie Kingston winning the Grand Championship and dedicating his win to Larry Sweeney, having it presented by Larry Sweeney's brother and his good friend, was just, oh, it was just crazy. Just so crazy. And I guess, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, of course, this past year, Chikara bringing me personally into the ring to congratulate me on beating cancer, which was unexpected and crazy and very surreal and something I obviously will never forget. And it's one of those things that I'm very grateful for Chikara for doing that.
Awesome. Yeah. It's cool that you mentioned King of Trios 2011. I remember that was actually around the time that I started getting into Chikara myself. And I remember that was when King of Trios was still in April. Or at least it was like earlier in the year than it has been lately. And I remember wanting so badly to go to this indie show weekend in Philadelphia. But yeah, that definitely sounds like some awesome stuff there. And I'm glad that Chikara was able to kind of give you that moment recently as well.
Yeah, and that's, all those moments I talked about are great, where I'm, King of Trios and High Noon and stuff, but like, that moment in the ring is mine and mine only that I can take with me and reminisce, and nobody else will know how I felt, or nobody else will know what that meant to me. And just the shock, and just, I basically like didn't pay attention during that entire main event. I was so like just overwhelmed with emotion and just so taken aback. And it was just a crazy night. I really don't even know how to explain it. It was just so, and it was great too, because I had one of my friends was dealing with some family problems while he was there, and he was kind of on edge. And almost in a way, like he didn't want to be there. He felt that he needed to be elsewhere. But when that moment happened, I could tell he's like, I'm really glad I stayed, and I'm really glad I was here to see that moment. It was a nice affirmation, because I was actually supposed to go to Chikara in their Chicago doubleheader in 2014. And that day before, the day I was going to fly out, is when I got diagnosed. And so I missed that entire trip. And then it was a year later, missing by a week, I got to go back to Chicago, almost as sort of just like exercising that demon in a way. And it worked out too, because that show happened to be on my birthday. So it just felt like, well, this feels really appropriate to go back to Chicago and do all this. And, it certainly is one of the most memorable birthdays I had, and such a great thing. I couldn't thank Chikara enough for it. And it's still, even to this day, is still quite surreal. It's on the DVD. It's on Chikaratopia. I will never watch it. I can't bring myself to watch it. It's one of those things I just want etched to my memory and don't want to go back and watch it. Also, I'm a little embarrassed to go back and watch it, but that's another story.
Yeah, that is cool though. So actually, kind of going into that, then I want to talk about the Chikara special. You mentioned PW Ponderings, which Jerome, you and others have kind of co-founded. I wanted to, how did the Chikara special come about?
Well, before Pro Wrestling Ponderings was even a thing, there was a website called the Cool Kids Table, which was an independent wrestling website similar to Pro Wrestling Ponderings that also had a podcast equivalent to it. And I was listening to some wrestling podcasts at the time, but none of them were really talking about independent professional wrestling. And so I searched iTunes and I found this one and I really liked it because it didn't just talk about one company. You could tell the guys were big Ring of Honor fans, but they would talk about PWG, IWA Mid-South. They would talk about Chikara a little bit. And if they weren't knowledgeable, they'd bring on somebody else to talk about it. And it really opened my horizons, and I love their style of writing. And I'm one of those people where if I really get into something, I want the world to know. I don't like to keep it for myself. I want to share with my friends. I want them to get into it. I want to go online and talk about it. And so I went to them, and at that time I was like, hey, I'd like to do a Ring of Honor article. And they said, okay. So I started doing that. And then the end of 08, my Chikara fandom was getting really high, and my Ring of Honor fandom was kind of dissipating somewhat. So I asked them, I said, can I switch over to do a Chikara article? And they said, sure, okay. And then a bunch of stuff happened with the founders of the website, and it ended up closing at the end of 2008. And one of the founders used to write for 411 Mania. And he said, and this is kind of getting into both Pro Wrestling Ponderings and the Chikara special stuff that's going on today. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, if you really want to continue doing your Chikara article, I can go talk to the 411 Mania people and see if they let you do it. And I said, sure. And Larry Zonka, who's a great friend of mine now, was totally on board with me having a Chikara article. So I got to continue doing it there, and it kept going for a long time. But writing a Chikara article every week, especially with the amount of content they were putting out at that time, was a big chore. Like, it would take me, if I sat down and just did it, it would take 3 to 4 hours, and it published on a Saturday. So if news broke on a Monday, by the time that article came out, it was kind of already old news. So it was too much of a time commitment. So I eventually just kind of stopped doing it, but I didn't want to completely not do anything with Chikara anymore. So, the Tumblr seemed like the best way to keep it current and not make it such a chore. So like when one match comes out, I can write about that right away. You know, YouTube video comes out, I can throw it up, blog, et cetera, et cetera. And it's more timely. You know, people get that news in little bits, in real time when they come out. And I was also doing Chikara DVD reviews at that time. Like I said, when I like something, I want to put it out there. I want people to know. And, you know, there was tons of reviews about Ring of Honor and PWG and all these other companies, but I didn't really see anybody covering Chikara that much. So I kind of made that my hill to die on. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of never stopped. And Brad Garoon, who was one of the people who founded that Cool Kids Table website, he took it upon himself to do this website called Open the Garoon Gate, which was a review blog for every Dragon Gate show and every appearance that Dragon Gate wrestlers made in other companies. And at that point, I had already reviewed about a couple of years of Chikara, and I had a lot of DVDs and such with Chikara people and outside companies that I thought, you know, this is something I could do for Chikara as well, because they kind of follow a similar system where they're both companies that have schools that kind of farm out their students to other places. And so that's where that idea came in. And then Pro Wrestling Ponderings was just kind of us filling the void that the Cool Kids Table left. There really wasn't a website that was filling these needs for the independent wrestling fan. And I really like podcasting. I like talking a lot and talking to fellow wrestling fans. So that was a natural thing. And it pretty much started as that. And then slowly we built this foundation of a website where now we have news, we have reviews, we have articles, we have results. I know we've had, you know, people like Gabe Sapolsky tell us, like, we're the place that he comes to for indie wrestling results. And a lot of people telling that, because I remember the days where you'd have to dig through a number of different message boards if you wanted to find the results of all the indie companies going on that weekend. And that's just a hassle. Who wants to go on message boards anymore? So we wanted a one-stop shop where people could come for results, stay for the podcast, stay for the original content. And so far, I'm very proud of what we've done. It's hard to believe that this upcoming May is going to be 7 years of Pro Wrestling Ponderings, which I would have never guessed back in the day. And I'm really proud of the work we've done. And I'd venture to say that a lot of people do consider us the place to go for independent wrestling on the internet, which is incredibly flattering, but we definitely put a lot of hard work into it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I've talked about it before, but in the same way that WrestleView has always been kind of my go-to for the WWE and TNA results, well, WWE more so, but PW Ponderings has definitely been my go-to for the indie wrestling results. I think it was like either Chikara or Ring of Honor that I first started checking results out for over there. And so, yeah, it's definitely a lot of good stuff.
And you know, kind of the hope is that maybe you'll come to check out, hey, we're on a PWG this weekend, and then you'll hear about CWF Mid-Atlantic, or you'll hear about AIW or Beyond Wrestling, something like that, and maybe you'll start getting interested in that, and that's kind of the hope.
I think that's actually what's kind of happened with me. Is I was checking results for one thing over there and got into other stuff, and it was great. I even like that you guys give enough attention to get at least a post out for some of the small local indie feds that kind of come by. So
yeah, I mean that's kind of the point. Is there's a lot of people who it's like, hey, we're a new group, or hey, we have this big show. Do you mind posting this press release or letting people know about it? And absolutely, you know, the point of the website is not to get ourselves over or make ourselves famous. We really want to do good for the independent wrestling community. And if something good comes of it for us, that's just a nice side effect, but that is not at all the goal.
Yeah. Speaking of podcasting, kind of with the Chikara special comes the Viva Chikara podcast. And I wanted to kind of talk about sort of the origins of that and just kind of go from there, kind of giving us an idea of what that's all about.
Well, you know, I did a Chikara podcast for a little bit over at the Cool Kids table with somebody who he ended up training at the Wrestle Factory, but he has not appeared on any shows, and I don't really want to give away his identity just in case something were to happen with him. But that went away, you know, when the website went away and he went away, and I think he was considering training for wrestling. So he can't really be reviewing and talking about wrestling on the internet and also training. That's pretty taboo. And so I was doing my article over on 411 Mania for Chikara, and Pro Wrestling Ponderings wanted something similar. And so they put out a call on, I don't even know how big Twitter was at that point, but they put out something saying, hey, we're looking for new writers. Here's some topics we like to talk about. And Justin Houston was one of those people who submitted his article for Chikara. And when it comes to anything dealing with Chikara, usually Jerome or Chris Gishun-Tong, who's also one of the co-founders of the website, they'll shoot it to me and they'll be like, what do you think? Because obviously they want to know that – I want to make sure this person knows what they're talking about. And so I read it and I laughed. I liked his style of writing. It was very obvious he was paying attention to stuff in detail as much as me. And I was like, this guy's perfect. And so he wrote an article. And, of course, just having the relationship of us talking Chikara, I threw out the idea to him. I said, what do you think about doing a podcast together? And he was down for it because like me, Justin likes talking, Justin likes writing. So it seemed like a very natural fit. And I want to say it was 2010 we started doing it together, maybe 2011. But it's just something we've routinely done since then, as we get together about once a month. We chat about Chikara, we chat about the shows coming up. And we've had quite a few people tell us, you know, I don't have the time or the resources to really follow Chikara, but I always make sure to tune into your podcast because that's all I need to get caught up on all the stories and the characters and whatnot. And again, that's the point, you know, is we want people to, because I understand more than anything else, Chikara has a lot of different dissemination points. You've got the main website, you have their social media, you have the Chikara 101, you have the YouTube channel. It's kind of hard to get every bit of detail from Chikara sometimes. Mm-hmm. So we like being that dissemination point where people can come to, they listen, and we give you everything you need to know. So if you're going into the next shows blindly, you're caught up and you know what you're doing. And for us, it's just something fun to do. You know, if we didn't have fun doing it, we wouldn't do it. But it's even for us, it's just a nice once a month thing to get together and catch up. And it's a lot of fun. And I'm glad it's serving its purpose to so many people.
Cool. So kind of from there, I had some other topics that I want to talk about. First off, one of the angles from Chikara that's always been kind of divisive for the fans was the shutdown angle, and I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on it and like everything that was going on.
You know, ultimately, I don't think it was a success. I think when Chikara closed, it was, I don't want to say it was at the height of its popularity, but pretty close. You know, people were really getting into a lot of the shows, and with Kevin Steen and the Young Bucks being around, that 2012 Cibernetico is maybe one of my favorite Chikara matches ever. It seemed like things were going really, really well. I was super excited for the Never Compromise pay-per-view, which I didn't attend because my friend had to get married that day. What a jerk. But, you know, Chikara closed, and obviously there was speculation and there was interest, but I think when it reopened, you know, 2014 – was somewhat of a dud of a year. 2015 was at the Challenge of the Immortals, which a lot of people kind of washed their hands clean of before it even started. So it just seems like there was a lot of interest in Chikara when it closed, and they've just had a really rough time getting people. You know, a lot of the diehard fans came back, but there's a lot of people who, you know, check in here and there who, unless it's King of Trios, the finale, just can't be bothered to check in. And I think that it's been tough. It's been a really rough go since they came back. And I think, you know, when they came back, they really need to come back with something big, something that people would sink their teeth into. And I don't think the flood in Deucalion was the right answer in retrospect. So, and I hate to say that because obviously I like Chikara and I follow it and I watch every show and all that stuff, but you know, something was missing. But I will say that when I watched the season premiere shows from this year, it felt like a fresh start. Like we're on the right track to something good. The matches were really great. We have some good stories going right now. So I feel like 2016 feels like the year where Chikara can hopefully put it back together and hopefully get some of the older fans back and some new ones as well.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So moving on to the next topic, you mentioned kind of what other people's reactions were to the Challenge of the Immortals. What did you think of it? Did you think it was what did you enjoy and what do you think they could have done better?
Well, for starters, I think it was too long. You know, it's one of those things where when I heard of it conceptually, I was like, this is a pretty cool idea. And I liked a lot of the teams. There were some really good matches thrown in there, but it was just too hard to keep track of. You know, 90 matches, that is a lot to ask of people to pay attention to for the span of 9 years. So it's one of those things where you hear about it and you either say, hey, I'm intrigued, I'll check it out, or you're just immediately wash your hands of because you don't want to pay attention to that much of it. And, you know, not every match was great, but not every match in wrestling is. Just kind of how it goes. But I think by the end, I will say this. I think the Challenge of the Immortals finals were fantastic. If you're going to have a 90-match year-round tournament, that's the way you end it. You make that finale count. And I don't know. I just feel like it wasn't you can even tell, like, Chikara seemed to kind of lose focus, and they kind of seemed to lose interest in it near the end. And some guys just weren't around or whatever else. And I think they did their best to try to make each team interesting. But I think if they were to do it again, I wouldn't do it for an entire year, and I would truncate how many matches there are. So I think it's a concept that could work, but I just think it was too big.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that. Like, I for the most part, I enjoyed it, but like you said, it was kind of long, and it was definitely hard to keep track of.
There's those people who wouldn't, you know, watch Chikara, and they would be like, oh, this is still going on?
Yeah.
They're like, wait, that was like March when they talked about it, right? Now it's like August, and that's still a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still a thing. It's like, well, are we close to it being over? Mm. Not really. Nah. Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. What are your thoughts on Kevin Condren? And I guess, like, the more recent stuff with Snowflake and whatnot.
He was far and away the most interesting character in 2015. You know, I think it's one of those... Everybody loves all the old Chikara people. You know, everybody who came back to Chikara, obviously they were fans of Eddie Kingston and The Colony and the Osirian Portal and the Throwbacks, all those guys that people were familiar with. And it's been a slow go with some of those newer characters, but Condren just had that personality, that aura about him that immediately interested me right away. And I remember when he turned from Kid Cyclone to that, I was like, holy crap, this guy can talk. Like, this guy's good. And they did a good job of capitalizing on it right away. The Snowflake turn was really bizarre. And unfortunately, it looks like he's, you know, there hasn't been much with him in the first half of season 16. So I don't know where he went, but I think far and away him in the Battleborn was one of those things that I was most intrigued by in 2015. And, you know, he's easily the most promising of all the new people they've had in the last year.
Yeah, I can definitely. I remember when I was talking to Babs for our interview, I remember saying that he was one of my favorites at the time. Yeah, I have no idea what's going on with all that, but, yeah, cause I remember, like, there were comparisons between him and Vin Gerard, with the obvious difference being, like, that Gerard kind of was forced to reveal himself, and Conrad did it willingly, and that kind of opened up a whole, you know, a whole different thing as far as, like, where he was coming from. So,
No, and I made that comparison too, but I thought, you know, the Vin Gerard thing was, had so much potential as well, and it was really, really great for about a year or so until it kind of just kind of petered out. I mean, that's just kind of the nature of the character. It didn't evolve, or it didn't evolve in a terribly interesting way. But Condren was still going, and he did evolve a lot in season 15. And I'm ready to see what the next step of his career is. So I hope this is not the end of Snowflake and Chikara, because there was definitely a lot of promise there. And I still want to know why they would put such a handsome man under a mask.
Yeah. So my last couple topics here are slightly related, and I wanted to bring this up really just to hear your take on it. As you know, one of the storylines that's kind of begun in season 16 is what I like to call the Chuck Taylor situation. The fact that Chuck Taylor isn't Chuck Taylor anymore, and Chuck Taylor is someone completely different. And I really wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that whole mess.
It's maybe my favorite angle in wrestling right now. When I heard about it, I was like, this is genius. Like, this is so great. Like Chuck Taylor, and I'm talking about the original Chuck Taylor, who Dustin of the Best Friends, one of my favorites in Chikara, for sure. Just so fun, so funny. Just everything about him to me represents kind of what's right in professional wrestling. It also helps that he's a part of my favorite match in Chikara history, that being the Icarus and Chuck Taylor versus Fire Ant Soldier Ant Mask versus Hair match from, 2009. But I just love his humor and mine are very similar. Like, I think he's hilarious. And I think the name changing stuff is just great. And I'm a big fan of the man behind the Chuck Taylor TM gimmick. So I'm so infatuated with the idea of this. And I think both guys are really charismatic. And I just think this can't fail. With those two personalities, this is going to be really awesome. And the fact that the new Chuck Taylor names his maneuver Soul Food, S-O-U-L, brilliant. Perfect. Yeah. What a great story.
Yeah, I do like it myself. I just think it's funny, especially as we kind of relate to my last topic here. I've unofficially named this before, but now I can kind of reveal it. I call it "Who's Chikara Is Anyway," because it's a bit of a mishap with points, and obviously, like, there's a question of the original Chuck Taylor's 2 points on the table, and the fact that the new Chuck Taylor just got his first point. So, kind of, what's your take on some of the points issues? And I think maybe more specifically with that, but just kind of in general.
Well, I think Chikara is purposely keeping it vague between the two of them, especially if Chuck Taylor, the old Chuck Taylor, is going to be changing his name every show. Like, does his points carry with that name, or do they not? So what I've decided, and I have a point total leaderboard on the Chikara Special review website, is to leave the old Chuck Taylor's points alone and to count the new Chuck Taylor's points as Chuck Taylor trademark, and just carry those as 2 separate points. And then, you know, it's, I might create a separate section for all of, what's his name? Bug Nevins now, all of his points and his different characters. But at the same time, like, he just lost to Heidi Lovelace. So
yeah, so that part of it is kind of off.
Right, so, like, I assume that Scoot Tatum and Rick Beanbag and Bug Nevin's points are all erased now, but, you know, Chikara's not making a clarification on it, and I think that's purposeful. So we'll see.
Yeah. Okay, well, that just about wraps everything up, but earlier this afternoon, I did make a call out on Twitter for questions using the hashtag #chattingboard, which will be the hashtag I use when I post this. And you and I were talking off air right before I started recording that we'd gotten 2 questions, and we actually just got a 3rd one, so this will be fun.
Oh, wow, okay.
This is going to be a lot more fun than I even hoped for. Okay, so the first question is from Juan Francisco de Coronado. That is at Juan FD.
Never heard of
him. And he asks, who is the greatest Ecuadorian wrestler in the history of Chikara Pro?
Oh, does he specifically say Chikara Pro?
He does say specifically Chikara Pro.
Oh, see, if he was saying all of wrestling, I was going to say Hugo Savinovich. You know, more people know him, I think, as a WWE announcer, but he's done All Japan. He was in WWC forever, but I hate giving that man any satisfaction, but I think just by default, I don't know if any other wrestler is Ecuadorian. Maybe one of the ice creams is, and they're just lying about being from Mexico. But I guess I'll find one. You got me here.
Okay, our next question is a two-parter from Jakob Hammermeyer, at J Hammermeyer on the Twitters. He says this is a two-parter. Part one, scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you that I am the new king of Chikara Pro?
Well, you know, we're both in the United States. We don't have a king. We have presidents, and we're in the midst of a presidential debate. And right now it's kind of hard to get excited for most of the candidates, I would say. But having a king, you know, him being the king of Chikara, I don't know how much that's going to affect me directly. But I like Jakob. I like the BDK. I actually like Pinky and Jaka quite a bit. But it's hard to get excited for him. I don't know what his platform is. I don't know what his plans are for Chikara. It seems like right now his platform is just bragging about being the king. So, I don't know. Let's go with three. Let's go three just to give him a number. Maybe okay. 3.5 if I'm feeling generous.
Okay, Kevin said 3.5. I'm going to go ahead and answer that myself. On a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to give him a sideways 8, which some of you might recognize as the Infinity Symbol. So,
you're a big Jakob supporter?
About as much as I can be.
Okay. Yeah, I got no problem with Jakob. You know, we'll see. Now he has, I guess, Hollow Wicked's under his control with the Eye of Tyr now or something.
Yeah.
So that's pretty weird.
I'm actually very interested in seeing, especially, you know, because last season we had the whole thing with Hollow Wicked following the order of Nazmaldoon. And,
well, that's the thing. It's like, I was like, wait, but Delirious put him under the spell of the Eye of Tyr. So now the Eye of Tyr use it again? There's something I'm missing, maybe.
Yeah, I have no idea what was going on. Because I remember something you even talked about on Viva Chikara right before the season finale. You mentioned, like, how interesting it would be if, like, Nazmaldoon would make some sort of, like, physical manifestation, if you will, at the season finale. And then, of course, not only did that not happen, Hollow Wicked lost the title at the very end, after the end credits roll, as it were. And I really don't know what's going on with that, other than now, apparently, Jakob has control of the Nightmare Warriors.
Yeah, apparently.
I had somebody ask me if that meant that was the end of the Nightmare Warriors, and my response was, I don't think that's what that means. I think that literally just means that's what's going to happen.
Why be in control of one faction? You could be in control of two.
Exactly. So the second part of Jakob's question is, great king or the greatest king?
Well, again, his reign just started. There's really no basis for me to say great or greatest. So I think it's going to be a wait and see situation. No answer for you, Jakob.
No. No answer from Ford, and I'm going to have to go with Ford on that one, and no answer from me as well. Let's see. So I actually had a couple questions come in right as I was getting to this segment from our friend, Thunder Fudge.
Oh, that's Justin.
Justin J. Houston on Twitter. Yeah. Your co-host from Viva Chikara. So the first question that he asks is, what other bejeweled body parts of Tyr can we expect to show up in Chikara Pro? So since we've already had an Eye of Tyr, what else
do you think? Yeah, I understand his question. I don't know, maybe a pinky toe of Tyr? You know, if Jakob has the eye, wouldn't Pinky Sanchez have the pinky of Tyr? Think about it.
That sounds like a good default. Yep. Okay, and the other question. Let's see. In your experience, do any wrestlers have interesting personal odors? Specifically at Sexy Chucky T. So I guess the artist formerly known as Chuck Taylor.
Like body odor? Was that the question?
I guess that's the question.
No, not of the wrestlers I've been around. Can't say for sure. I've talked to Chuck a couple times just strictly as a fan. I'm sure he has no idea who I am. I've bought a lot of Chuck Taylor t-shirts. I like that man quite a bit. But I did not notice any smell of his. Now, the Swamp Monster, who I had a picture with, he had a little bit of a smell. But he's the Swamp Monster. He's sort of a swamp. That just comes with, that's just expected. So I can forgive him. He actually, and I'll say this, did the Swamp Monster smell? Yes. Did he smell as bad as I thought he would? No.
That's fair enough. I think I got a small whiff of it even watching one of his matches, and that was off of YouTube. That wasn't even a live show. So you figure that one out. But I do have one last question from Justin J. Houston, and I think I'll kind of wrap things up with this. Where does Fire Ant, where at the Fire Ant, stand on marriage equality? I'll take your best guess here.
Oh my gosh. I assume he's in favor. I have no reason to think otherwise. You know, and it's funny because one reason I say that is because I think he's a fan of unity. Because if you think about it, he's really the one ant who's been the linchpin of the colony this whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, Worker Ant wasn't there from the beginning. Silver Ant went with the Nightmare Warriors under whatever brainwashed thing he was. And then Soldier Ant was AWOL for a long time. And Fire Ant was really the only one who just kept things together. So I'm going to say he is. What was the exact question again?
Where does he stand on marriage equality?
I'm going to say he's firmly for equal marriage for all.
Okay. Definitely good with that. I'd like to thank everyone who sent in their questions. And like with that, I guess we can kind of wrap this up. So Kevin, before we go, I'd like you to go ahead and let everyone know where they can find you on social media and what projects you're involved with.
Well, first you can follow me on Twitter at KFord13. That's my personal Twitter account. Also, you can follow at Chikar Special on Twitter. That's kind of a dissemination point for all the Chikar Special websites I do. But the latest wrestling project I'm involved with is, fortunately, being with Pro Wrestling Ponderings and doing all this stuff online has given me an opportunity to do commentary in the wrestling business. And I am happy to be the announcer for Nova Pro Wrestling, a new wrestling company out of Northern Virginia. Two shows in the can. We have another show coming up on March 20th. So if you're interested in that, go to VA Wrestling on Twitter. You can also go to novaprowrestling.tumblr.com or search for it on Facebook. We have another show coming up in Virginia. So if you're anywhere in the Maryland, Virginia, Washington, D.C. area, definitely would love for you to come out. And if you're not in any of those areas, all of our shows are available on Smart Mark Video on DVD or MP4. Or you can stream them at smvod.com. I think that's all the plugs I have.
Awesome. Thanks again for coming on here again, Kevin. It's been an honor and a pleasure chatting with you.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again to Kevin Ford for coming back on to chat with me. And a big shout out to @JuanFDCoronado, @JHammermeyer, and @JustinJHouston for sending their questions in on Twitter. And thank you for listening to Chatting with the Jakarmi. If you're interested in being on the show or in doing a written chat, feel free to sign up on our website at jakaram15.com. And if you get a chance, be sure to rate and review this show on iTunes and Stitcher and let me know how I'm doing. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at CI15Podcast and like us on Facebook at Jakaram 15 Minutes or Less. Till next time, this is Alex Jakarza, and I'm looking forward to chatting with you, Jakarmi.